Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha, Jaya Girivara Dhari. Jaya Yashoda Nandana, Jaya Braja Jana Ranjana. Jaya Yashoda Nandana, Jaya Braja Jana Ranjana. Jaya Yamuna Tiravana Chari, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha, Jaya Girivara Dhari. Jaya Yashoda Nandana, Jaya Braja Jana Ranjana. Jaya Yamuna Tiravana Chari, Jaya Kunja Bihari. Yamuna Tiravana. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vishnu Padad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Stotra Shat Shishimadas Vangris A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Harinam Sankirtan Mahayagya Ki Jai Gaur Pramanandi. All glories assembled devotees. All glories assembled devotees. All glories assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet shrinvatam swakata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantastoya badrani vidunoti suhitsatam Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Continuing on, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Verses 22 and 23. So we'll just, like yesterday, I'll chant once and then maybe one Prabhu and one Mataji. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishno Smadhanam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmani Vedanam Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smadhanam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmani Vedanam Shravanam Kirtanam Vishno Smadhanam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmani Vedanam Iti Pumsarpita Vishno Bhaktis Chennaiva Lakshana Kriyeta Bhagavad Yadha Tanmanye Ditam Uttamam Jai. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prahlad Maharaj said, Hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming His servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto Him, In other words, serving him with the body, mind, and words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. So continuing on with the purport, we've made it to Smaranam, or at least in our reading we've made it to Smaranam. And it's not a very long section, but as Prabhu said yesterday, it's pretty esoteric actually. Prabhupada really gets into it. So it's very interesting. Where is it? Here we go. All right. Number three, Smaranam. After one regularly performs the process of hearing and chanting, and after the core of one's heart is cleansed, Smaranam, remembering, is recommended. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.11, Shukadev Goswami tells King Parikshit, Etan nirvidyamananam ichitam akutobhayam, yoginam nripanirnitam harernam anukirtanam. Quote, O King, for the great yogis who have completely renounced all material connections, for those who desire all material enjoyment, and for those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord is recommended. According to different relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are varieties of namanukirtanam, chanting of the holy name, and thus, according to different relationships and mellows, there are five kinds of remembering. These are as follows. A. Conducting research into the worship of a particular form of the Lord. B. Concentrating the mind on one subject and withdrawing the mind's activities of thinking, feeling, and willing from all other subjects. C. Concentrating upon a particular form of the Lord. This is called meditation. D. Concentrating one's mind continuously on the form of the Lord. This is called drutanusmriti, or perfect meditation. And E, awakening a liking for concentration upon a particular form. This is called samadhi or trance. Mental concentration upon particular pastimes of the Lord in particular circumstances is also called remembrance. Therefore, samadhi trance can be possible in five different ways in terms of one's relationship. Specifically, the trance of devotees on the stage of neutrality is called mental concentration. Om jnana timivandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave nama shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale Swayam rupa kadadmayam dadati svapadantikam vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai. So we've reached Smaranam. Everyone's remembering what we said before? As you heard, this is a very interesting section. Prabhupada goes into how our relationships with Krishna affect the way we remember him. And actually in the paragraph, you can kind of see that this, both from this section also and from many, many shlokas, you can see that this applies both in our liberated state and in the conditional state. I'm going to give a caveat though, so don't get too excited. What I mean by that is, what you can see here is that the quality of what we remember depends on our state of being. In the liberated state, depending on our relationship with Krishna, as we'll go into a little, I'm not going to go that deep because I can't go that deep because I'm not there and I don't know much about how the relationships equate, but we'll look at it. But even in the beginning, and we can hear from Bhagavad Gita and things like that about how our memory is state dependent. This is even known nowadays in psychology, state dependent memory. If you're pissed off, what do you remember? Well, negative things usually. You usually don't remember. If I make you mad, you usually don't remember, Atma's so nice and, you know, he's so sweet. No, you'll remember Atma's like this, 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 this. So our memory, krodho bhavati sammoha, sammoha smriti vibramaha. Our state of being, krodha, in this verse, you know, this is that famous sequence when you contemplate the objects of the senses, etc., etc. So when you get to the state of anger, krodha bhavati sammoha, that bewilders us, sammoha smriti vibramaha, and that affects our memory. So both in the conditional state and in the liberated state, our memory is affected by our state of being. So it really behooves us to, especially in the conditional state, to really work on our state of being in order to improve the quality of our remembrance. My Guru Maharaj used to say that smaranam, remembering, is a gift. You can't force real smaranam. And we'll look at some shlokas today about that, but Prabhupada says in one purport that the liberated souls, they for them, the pastimes of the Lord are revealed to them. They don't force it. They're not like, genuine remembrance of Krishna is not made up of the subtle body trying to create some sort of information or reaching back to what we read and things like that. Real remembrance of Krishna is actually a revelation from the heart. That's very important to understand because, you know, in the beginning it's nice to practice. We try to remembering Krishna and all that, and devotees do so many funny things. There was one devotee, he would tell me that every time I see a Pittsburgh Steelers shirt, I think that Krishna is stealing my heart. I was like, wow. Or he had a few of them. They're kind of funny. So one of them was that. The other one is whenever I see the back of an Impala car, it reminds me of Jagannath's eyes because the lights are like round. Like my favorite one was, this is a different devotee. He's not in Minneapolis anymore. But he was also kind of sentimental. He's like, Prabhu, you know, I got pulled over by the police yesterday. I'm like, oh, that sucks. You know, I'm like, yeah, but it wasn't so bad because as soon as I saw the blue lights of the cop car, I started remembering Krishna. My God. I don't think that's exactly the type of remembrance that Prabhupada's trying to move us towards here. So, you know, in the beginning, we may do various things to try to remember Krishna, but our remembrance is, at best, it's immature. You know, like kind of Prabhupada gives the unripe mango versus the ripe mango. And you can see the difference because when you read about the devotees in Bhagavatam and you hear about what happens to them when they remember Krishna, it's like a completely different platform. You know, when we see the deities, it's nice and all that. But when they remember Krishna, just it's a beautiful experience. I'm just, some shlokas are coming to mind about the qualities that happen with genuine remembrance. Starting basic, what is it? Yad anudyasina yukta karma grantim nibandhanam kova. Oh shoot, I forgot now. You can see how remembrance is dependent on your state of being, because when you're nervous giving a class, you can't remember shlokas. Yad anudyasina yukta karma grantim nibandhanam chandanti kovidastasya kona kurya kataritim. That by remembering the Lord, what is it? Might as well just look it up. It's very beautiful. By the sword. Yeah. It's by the sword. Intelligent persons take up the sword of knowledge. You don't mind if I take a moment, do you? Well, you don't have a choice, so it's okay. All right. It's nice to hear the actual translation. With sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary work karma by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message? So this is the beginning of it actually cuts through our knots. Then you have things like, we'll look at this one verse about Vyasadeva's remembrance in a second. It's very powerful. It says that simply by the purity of his remembrance of Krishna, he was able to liberate conditioned souls from all forms of material bondage. So that's another example of real remembrance. Or you have Narada Muni, Dhyayatas Charanam Bhojam, Bhava Nirjita Chetasa, Autkantashu Kalakshasya, Hridyasvin Meshanerhani. That just by thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord, remembering, like Prabhupada says, thinking of the Lord is remembrance. He was over Premati Bhara Nirbina, Pula Kangoti Nivrita, Ananda Samplavit. He was submerged in an ocean of ecstasy. And as we'll see, another quality of Narada Muni's remembrance is given is that his remembrance of Krishna was so powerful that even at from his previous life to this life, even though it crossed a whole creation, even at the destruction of the creation, his memory was not disturbed, or the start of the new creation. So just examples you can see from looking at how the devotees, what their qualities of the remembrance are, you can see that genuine remembrance of Krishna, number one, is a gift. Number two is way beyond what we're experiencing right now. But our duty as practicing sadhakas is to obviously move to that level. And so it's beautiful that here in the purport and also in these other shlokas, not only do they give the examples of the beauty and power of genuine remembrance of Krishna, but they give us the roadway to get there too. And so we can look at that a little bit. So Prabhupada obviously points out, starting out, after one regularly performs the process of hearing and chanting, and after the core of one's heart is cleansed, smaranam, remembering, is recommended. So what is this saying? We shouldn't remember Krishna before? What does this mean? I'll read it again. It's kind of an interesting sentence. After one regularly performs the process of hearing and chanting, and after the core of one's heart is cleansed, smaranam, remembering, is recommended. So don't remember Krishna until you're basically past anartha nivritti, I guess. Is that the message? What are your thoughts? No, it's not a rhetorical question. I'm waiting. what do you think it means? This? Yeah, I look. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that it's not that long of a section, but it's very nice, yeah. It's right after almost the section we're reading now, right? It's like the next section. Yes, as we said, smarana is a gift. It's not possible to remember. So you hear about advanced devotees, part of their sadhana in that sense is remembering. They'll sit and they'll remember the Lord. You hear stories of the person cooking in his mind and burning his finger. But it's not recommended for us to use smarana as a core. What we do is hearing and chanting. Because if we try to just sit and remember, we know what happened. We all know what happens when we sit and try to remember Krishna. Our memory of Krishna is definitely not strong enough that the universal destruction will not disturb it, right? As soon as a devotee looks at me the wrong way, I'm remembering anything but Krishna, right? So as a sadhana, as a direct practice, smaranam is not recommended until we come at least past anartha nivritti. And then Srila Prabhupada goes on, he quotes this famous verse about, O King, for the great yogis who have completely renounced all material connections, and for those who desire all material enjoyment, and for those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord is recommended. So this is, I don't fully understand why Prabhupada quoted this verse here. Do you have any insight on that? Yeah, he does. But.
In other words, Namkirtan should go on side by side, even if one comes to the point of smaranam and qualify for smaranam practices.
Yeah, exactly.
Namkirtan should go on side by side because it's recommended for everyone.
Yeah, that's the sense I had too, because it was just interesting. It goes straight into the different relationships of Krishna, but this verse kind of talks about us and our conditioned state a little bit. People are desiring things, not desiring things, desiring liberty. Everybody should do Nam Sankirtan, right? And what's interesting is we all know that this smaranam, sometimes we forget that this is pretty much one of the preeminent practices. Smartavya satatam vishnur. Vismartavyo nagjatushit. Sarva vidhi nishedasur etayor eva kinkara. That remembering Vishnu, always remember Krishna, and Never Forget Krishna. I wrote a kid's song about that. It's kind of cool, but I won't sing it now. always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. All the other principles are meant to be servants of these two. So smarnas is very important. We have to get there. We can't not get there. My Guru Maharaj said, at the end of your life, that's all you have, because you may not be able to even chant the holy name. All you have is smaran. So getting there, getting from this state through Nam Kirtan, through Shravanam, is very, very important. And Narada Muni's pastime, both his discussion with Srila Vyasadeva and his own example of his life, is very, very beautiful for understanding all these devotions. I really love Narada Muni's pastime. I read it as much as possible because it's a direct, like, what is it called? Case study or testimony of going from a conditional state to Narada Muni, you know, like, I mean, Pragayata. At the end, he says, Pragayata sa viryani tirta padash priyashava ahuta eva me shigram darshanam yati chetasi. That he says that I came to such a state that as soon as I sing Krishna's names, almost like a servant, when I being called by a servant, he comes and manifests in my heart, just like an ordinary person would call his servant. That's how powerful Narada Muni's singing is, you know. And the beauty is, so we all love kirtan, and we're trying to get to that state. So the beauty is Narada Muni shows step by step how he went from just being an ordinary maidservant's son, through sadhu sangha, through shravana, through kirtana, through smarana, it's all there, all the way up to where he could just sing the names of the Lord and Krishna's just bursting out of his being, you know. So it's very good for us to study that section repeatedly. Before he starts that, though, he encourages Srila Vyasadeva in his remembrance of Krishna. And he gives four qualities that Srila Vyasadeva has that allows his genuine remembrance of Krishna to manifest. And it's very important to understand. It's 13. Aho Mahabhaga Bhavan Amogadrik Shuchi Shrava Satirato Dudhavrata Uruskramasya Kila Bhanda Muktaye Samadina Nusmara Yadvicheshtitam. So he says that, first, basically he says, O Vyasadeva, your remembrance of Krishna, Uruskramasya Kila Bhanda Muktaye, you can Akila, you can remove the bondage of all living entity, all types of bondage, not just one type. Every type of bondage that the living entities are experiencing can be removed simply because of your powerful remembrance of the Lord. Samadhi na anusmara, anusmara, yadvicheshtitam. Why do you have this power? Aho mahabhaga, you're very fortunate to have this power. Bhavan, amogadrik, the first quality is very interesting, amogadrik. Prabhupada gives a really, really powerful lecture on this verse, so I don't know, it's just look up the verse and find Prabhupada's lecture on that number. It's super awesome. He breaks it all down very nicely. Amogadrik. Drik means, what is drik? To see, right? It means vision. Vision. Amoga. Moga is sin. Moga is translated as sinful sometimes, and sometimes it's translated as ineffective. Ineffective. So someone who is mogadrik, who's full of sins, their vision is very ineffective. They can't really see what's actually going on. We kind of see, but we don't see the actual principle that's playing out. But Srila Vyasadeva is called amogadrik. His vision is perfect and very effective. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, therefore, Srila Vyasadeva had perfect vision because he was trained to see things in the proper perspective. It's very interesting. He was trained to see things in the proper perspectives. I've noticed, at least in my devotional life, my conditional tendency is I try to take Krishna consciousness and sort of add it to my perspective. You know, it's very, very easy to do. That I have a perspective on things, and I want that perspective to be supported somehow or another because I like it, right? You know, I think it's a good perspective. That's why I have it, you know. So then I find nice shlokas to fit it in there. You know, we do all these things to support our perspective instead of transforming our perspective. And we were discussing this in the car. It's an analogy that I've used before about what it means to become, to transform into a devotee. And I'm sorry if you've heard it before, but I remember I was watching this really nice video by the ID people, intelligent design people. They did a video on butterflies and how their existence is possible via evolution. Very interesting, but different topic. So they showed how a caterpillar turns into a butterfly. And it really was a power. When I was watching, I was like, this is exactly what we're meant to do as devotees going from the conditioned state into the pure state. It's really interesting. The caterpillar has its own existence. And when it goes into the cocoon, though, to become a butterfly, there's a whole system that happens. It's very interesting. And that system is not simply growing wings out of the caterpillar. What happens to the caterpillar is there's some mechanism that literally dissolves its whole being. All the cells are destroyed, except for a very few. And then from those very few cells that remain, a whole new creature is born. It's really, really far out. So I was thinking, this is what our transition as devotees actually is. When we come to Krishna consciousness, many times we try to become a devotee by just sticking wings on our back. I want to stay as a caterpillar, but I'm going to stick some wings on my back so I get a little more recognition or whatnot, you know. Whatever. We like recognition. So whatever it takes to get recognition, right? We don't actually sit at the lotus feet of our guru and dissolve. In sadhu sangha, our whole false ego has to dissolve. So we have to be trained. The part of that disillusion is being trained to see things in the right perspective. So that's the first quality, being trained to see things in this right perspective. Remember, these are four qualities that allowed Vyasadeva to have his remembrance. Second quality is Shuchi Shravaha. Shuchi Shravaha. It's interesting because Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam translates Shuchi Shravaha as spotless fame. Our fame is spotless, which kicks me out right off the bat. You know. But in the lecture, he translates it as Shuchi Shrava, very pure hearing. Our hearing must be very pure. So that's why Svamaran is not first. Our hearing must be very, very pure. And our fame also has to be pure. I remember when I first read that, I was just like lamenting, like, God, you know, like, I'm out. But then I remember, you know, there's other verses that give you encouragement, like in the 11th canto where it says, someone who's actually in the mode of goodness, even if they do something improper, they repent for it, they feel remorseful for it. So I'm like, oh, I can do that, hopefully, sometimes. So there's some hope. But this pure hearing is the second quality that Vyasadeva spent time improving the qualities of his hearing, who are we to not work very, very hard at improving the quality of our hearing? Again, just like our vision, we usually filter what's coming in. We don't dissolve ourselves and then hear. What's the first quality? Amoga drik, yeah. Trained to see things in the right perspective. Second? Pure hearing, right? Amoga drik. Shuchi shava. Satya rito. Satya rito. Rati means, we know rati. Rati means like attraction. Like you have a pull, you know. Attraction is not a mental thing. You don't have to, sorry for the example. I don't have to, when I'm walking around the street, I don't have to think, okay, I'm going to be attracted to this woman right now. I'm going to do it. No, it's just, you know. It's like, it's a force. We have to have this pull towards what? Satya, to the absolute truth. We have to Vyasadeva was attracted to the truth. He was an essence seeker, as I'm sure you've all discussed here many times. His practice of Krishna consciousness was not just another religion. He was actually seeking the absolute truth, and he was willing to do anything to find it. What is it? Prabhupada says, if realizing the absolute truth is the ultimate goal, it must be carried out by any means. So we have to be attracted to finding the absolute truth. And a big part of finding the absolute truth is, especially in the beginning, realizing that we don't have it. And what we're thinking probably isn't that. It's probably not the full truth. It may be partial, but it's not the full thing. So he had perfect vision, he had pure hearing, he has attracted the absolute truth, and he was dritta vrataha. The fourth quality is dritta vrataha. Dritta, like dhritarashtra, dritta means to grab. So dhritarashtra, he grabbed the kingdom, right? He grabbed it. And my Guru Maharaj used to say, we're dritta money, we're dritta whatever. All kinds of things were dritta. But what Vyasadeva was holding on to is dritta vrat. What are vrats? Vows, right? We just had Purushottam. So devotees have different vows. Sometimes they're standard vows, chanting 16 rounds. Sometimes they're like extra stuff during a special month. But Vyasadeva held on to his vows very, very tightly. Very, very tightly. This allowed him, uruskramasya kila bhanda muktaye, to have the remembrance that was so powerful that he could liberate all of, he's still liberating us to this day through his writings. Another beautiful example to understand how remembrance can come about is a very simple thing, but a lot of times, as we mentioned, we as devotees, we struggle to be steady in our remembrance. We always try, I gotta remember Krishna, I gotta remember Krishna, you know, blah, 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 you know. So that steadiness of remembrance is very difficult. And so there's a very, very beautiful, like, you know, or even if we're, whether we're in the temple or outside the temple, you know, we hear the verses like, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mana mama nusmara yudhyacha. In all time, we have to both remember Krishna and we have to do our duties, whether you're outside or inside. We all have duties. And so the big question is, how, you know, like, even inside it's difficult to remember where Krishna's everywhere, let alone outside if you're working and all that and you got, oh God, all kinds of stuff going on. How? Well, the clue is given again by Narada Muni. It's a very, very beautiful verse in the fifth chapter. And this gives a secret. And my Guru Maharaj, sorry to talk about my Guru Maharaj, but he's left his body so you can't get initiated by him anyway, so don't worry about it. My Guru Maharaj used to say that obedience is the greatest remembrance of Krishna. Very interesting. Obedience is the greatest remembrance of Krishna. And Narada Muni kind of hints at this, directly says it in 1.5, it's like 32 or something. Kurvana yatra karmani. Kurvana yatra karmani. When you are doing whatever duties you're doing, kurvana, within that space. Bhagavat shikshaya sakrit. Asakrit, sakrit means once. Asakrit means more than once, so regularly. What? Bhagavat shiksha. Shiksha is instructions. Bhagavat, the instructions of Krishna. So if you, while you're doing it, your duties, you're doing them according to the instructions of Krishna. Grinantas guna namani krishnasyanu smaranticha. You will automatically have constant remembrance of Krishna. Again, it's a very different position. If you think about it closely, it's a very different position than forcefully trying to, like, you know, like forcing the mind. It's just because the underlying nature of our being, like I said, our remembrance is state-based. Our underlying nature of our being is not Krishna conscious. So even if we try to overtly force it, there's an analogy given by psychologists that we are all like mahouts. You know, mahout? Mahout means for someone who drives an elephant. We're all like mahouts riding on an elephant, and our normal conscious mind is like the driver, and the elephant is like the rest of us, our deeper being. So if the elephant's listening to the mahout, all is well, you know. But as soon as the elephant has a different idea than the driver, who's going to win, right? So you got to train your elephant, is basically what's going on. That happens to us all the time. I know I want to control my senses, but somehow this elephant-like force just pulls me in the wrong direction, right? You got to train your elephant. So training your elephant comes, you know, that's a whole other class, but it begins by following the instructions of Krishna. A lot of times we just rush into activity. We have no idea what we're doing. I got to remember Krishna. Now I got to go, woo, you know, and then we're in there, we're just doing all kinds of stuff, and then we can play Prabhu, I can't remember Krishna. I'm like, well, what instructions did you follow while you're doing your activity? Well, I don't know. I did it. You know, you told me to do it. Telling you to do it is only one part. If you look at Bhagavad Gita, there's what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to do it, and what we're supposed to do with the results. Those three, all three have to be under the guidance of Guru and Krishna. What we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to do it, at least for me, is very tough, because I always want to do it my way. I know what to do, don't worry, I can do it. And what to do with the results, you know, if we make it there, that's great. But, you know, so we have to let the instructions of Krishna enter into our activities. Does anybody remember any verses from Gita where Krishna gives us instructions on what qualities we should invest into our activities? Sorry? With devotion. So if there's devotion in there, then that activity becomes bhakti. Yeah, exactly. Good one. Yeah. Any other instructions of Krishna in our activities? We're all going to do activities after this. I'm guaranteeing it. That's probably going to happen. So it's good to know some instructions. Yes, Master. Yeah. Good, excellent. Do it for me. Good. So how do we do it for him? What does it look like? Krishna gives some like detailed stuff in the Gita, you know, third chapter, fourth chapter, fifth chapter especially. There's certain qualities that we should bring into our activities. Yes, Mataji. That's the one I was thinking of. Yes, say it. Please say the whole thing. Yeah, the rest of it. Yeah, exactly. Mahi Sarvani, that's the one I was thinking of that comes to mind. Mahi Sarvani Karmani, Sanyasya Dhyatma Chetasa, Nirashir Nirmam Ubhutva, Yudhisva Vigatadvara. So there's a few qualities here. This is just an example. If you read the Gita, there's so many examples of what Krishna wants, what qualities in our activities, not just do it. Arjuna was told, when was Arjuna given the instruction to fight by Krishna? What verse? Or about what verse? You don't have to be exact. Huh? Yeah, even after he surrendered, though. He surrendered. He said, Krishna, you tell me what to do. And then Krishna, when did Krishna tell him that you should fight? First time. Yeah, 218, I think it's 17 or 18, right? So if he surrendered, and he's telling him to fight in 218, why didn't the Gita just end there? Why is there a whole, whole another 16 chapters? Because, huh? Doubts? Yeah, he didn't. Because the whole point is not the action; it's the quality of the action. That's where the real juice is. Duryodhana was all. Duryodhana, I was already to follow the instruction. All right, I'll fight. No problem. I can do that. But it was the quality of the action. So yes, these qualities. Give up all the sarva karmani, mayi sarvani karmani, sanyasya adhyatma. Like you said, give all your activities to me. Karmani, mayi sarvani karmani, sanyasya adhyatma chetasa. Prabhupada translates, you should have full knowledge. You have to do it in full knowledge. You have to have full spiritual awareness in your activities. That means, like Ishupanishad said, that means both knowing ignorance and knowing transcendental knowledge. You need to know what's going on. You need to know if you're being influenced by the mode of ignorance or if you're mode of transcendence. We got to know what's going on. Nirashir, no proprietorship. No, I'm not claiming that this is mine, that's mine, this activity is mine. And nirmamo, nirashir is not seeking profit out of it, not seeking profit for myself. These are big qualities. This is not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. But these qualities have to grow. Otherwise, our activities, as Prabhupada says in the seventh chapter, even in the transcendental service of the Lord, they'll be contaminated by the material qualities. Right? So these qualities have to grow. So no seeking profit, no nirmamo, no proprietorship, and our all-time favorite, vigata dvara, overcoming laziness. Laziness. Vigata dvara means a fever, it just consumes our mind, right? So this is just an example that Narada Muni is saying, if you want to automatically, just naturally remember Krishna in your activities, you have to do your activities according to the instructions of Krishna, not just running around like a madman with head cut off or something like that, chicken with a head cut off. So these are example of qualities. And then he gives some more guidance. Actually, he doesn't give guidance, Krishna gives him guidance. Krishna says, I'm about to give you some memory here. And this memory is very special. And he says, the reason you have this memory is not because of your own efforts, but it's mad anugrahat, it's by my mercy you'll have this memory. And Krishna says, matir mayini bhadeyam, navi padyeta karhichit, praja sarge nirodhepi, mam anusmarya, smritischa mad anugrahat. This is the verse where he tells Narada Muni that this memory of yours that I'm going to give you, because I'm giving it to you, it is transcendental. Transcendental memory means it is not praja sarge nirodha. Even when this universe is created or destroyed, it will not be affected. How do you get that memory? Krishna says, sat sevaya dirghayapi jata mai dridhamati hitvavadam imam lokam gantam maj janatam asi. That it's very interesting. Sat sevaya, by doing service, the mood of service to the absolute truth. The activities we do, see, this verse we're reading is about the nine processes of devotion. Devotion is premised on the attitude of service. And it's very, very easy, at least I found myself, I'm here now, right, for a week, and we're doing so much Harinam. if I really take a litmus test of how much when I'm chanting I'm actually in the mood of serving the holy names, it's kind of lament. You probably wouldn't have me speaking if you actually knew what was going on, you know. So I just will keep that to myself. But you know what I mean? We can do Shravanam, we can do Kirtanam, we can try the rest of it too. But the mood of service has to grow. Half the time I'm worried about, because, you know, this in Minneapolis it's nice because no one knows how to play kirtan. No one knows how to give class. I'm like king of the hill there, and I don't even know anything, and I suck. But when I come here, it's like, oh, my God, you know. So I'm like always worried, am I playing the wrong beat? And there's no mood of service. Sat sevaya, that mood of service has to grow. And my Guru Maharaj, sorry again, my Guru Maharaj. My Guru Maharaj, he gave a beautiful explanation on this transition from doing things in an unservice-like way to a service-like way. And he said that in the beginning, because prakritir kriyamanani, because we're influenced by material nature, our ahankar, our false ego, is very, very strong. And the word ahankar is very interesting. Ahankar has two words put together, aham and kar, kara. Aham is I, and kara means do. So we have the attitude, I do, I do, I do, I do. And that's the root of it. That's the root of not remembering Krishna. Because who are remembering? Me. I'm remembering, I can do this. I'm going to do this. And there's so many, we know, there's so many yogic practices try to overcome this ankar because they even realize that it's the root of all our suffering. It's the root of all our problems. This I do, I do, I do, I do. But my Guru Maharaj said the devotional path is a very, very simple solution. Instead of being absorbed by your false ego, ahankara, you just have to start manifesting your real ego. The word for real ego in Sanskrit is kinkara. You know, it's the word for servant? Kinkara. Kinkara. That also has two words put together. Kim and kara. Kim means what? It's a question word. What? Kara means do. So a false ego is I'm going to do. A real ego is what can I do? My dear Prabhu, what can I do? So in our Shravanam, in our Kirtanam, if we keep Sat Seva, he says, even just for a few days, Sat Sevaya Dirgayapi, Krishna says, one who engages my service even for a few days gains firm and fixed intelligence in me. And he, after leaving this present deplorable material world, he goes on to be my associate in the spiritual world. Just for a few days, he said, of service. If we actually serve in that mood, even for a short time, Krishna's mad anugrahit, he gives us remembrance. And that remembrance is so strong that even if this world just blows up, you won't forget. It's very beautiful. So these are some of the qualities that are meant to develop as we're hearing and as we're chanting. The mood of service. We have to be trained to see things in the proper perspective. And the core of our being has to be transformed. Just 1 minute, or a few minutes, I'll just say that. Srila Jiva, so the whole root of our problem is ignorance, as we know. And I'm sure you read this because you were reading Bhakti Rita Sindhu, I believe, so you probably read this already, but we talked about this in the car, that I really love the verse that Srila Jiva Goswami quotes as an indication both of how to overcome this root ignorance that's creating all our trouble, and what the definition of that ignorance is. Because sometimes when you get a clear definition, it wakes you up a little bit. No pun intended, no one's sleeping here. So he said, it's that, I hope I remember the whole thing, but I might not. But yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya karmashan udgratayanti udgrantayanta tanvan narikta matayo yatayo birudas what's it? Bhajavasudevam, yeah. So this verse has both the very nice definition of the problem and the solution. The word for ignorance in this verse, Jiva Goswami points out, is karma ashaya. Karma ashaya. Karma ashaya. And I think even, I don't know Hindi that well, but someone told me in Hindi the word ashaya is also there. That ashaya means hope. We have a hope. Where do we put our hope? In karma, in fruitive activities. That's the definition of ignorance. We have a hope that somehow by my material activities I will be successful or I will be happy or I will gain what I need. This hope, it's a very avidya kama karma, this hope is very deeply rooted that through fruitive activities I will get what I need. And it says that so many people try to, even when they realize this is a false hope, durashaya. The other word that Prahlad Maharaj uses, durashaya, dirty hope, dirty hope. The other, you know, even when you realize that you need to overcome that, people try so many things, but because they're rikta matayo, their mind is empty, the waves of sense gratification just drown them anyways. So it says, yet pada pankaja pilasa vilasa bhaktiya, that only by serving the toes, not the toes, of the lotus feet of the Lord, it says devotees can very easily uproot this false hope, this dirty hope. So these are some principles. When we are engaging in Nam Sankirtan, when we are engaging in hearing, the attitude of service must be there. So that if we don't have that kinkara attitude, we won't let our perspective be trained to see things in the right way. We won't become attracted to this truth. And as we've been discussing, honestly speaking, the only way for this to come about is sadhu sangha. Because until you experience a few things from associating with a genuine sadhu, it's very impossible. You don't even know what you're supposed to do. You can't even tell if what you're doing is devotion or not, first of all. Second thing is, you won't be inspired. You won't have the faith, the trust that, yes, if I become like the sadhu, like that's what Narada Muni says, when he had their association, he became attracted to their character. What that means is you actually have the faith that if I become like them, things will be, my life will actually be better. The reason we choose ego over humility is because we trust ego more. We trust our bad qualities more than the good qualities because we have so many lifetimes of experience with them. So we know them well. Like Pranandaprabhu in Minneapolis says, a known devil is better than an unknown God. We love our bad qualities. We trust them. We've lived with them. We take care of them. They take care of us, and we think so. You know, we have a very strong relationship with our bad qualities. And it's without an example of someone who's actually absorbed in the Krishna consciousness, it's very difficult to have the faith needed to let go of the bad and to hold on to the good. Also, when you're with the sadhu, especially like we said, there's two ways of associating. One is just association, the other is seva. And I'll end with this. Just from my little experience, I got to spend some time with my Guru Maharaj, and I can really, really testify that even though I'm still a rascal, but that experience of actually being the servant of someone else is so beneficial for our Krishna consciousness. Because unless we're in that position, we really don't get the experience of what it's like to have you not in the center of everything. When I was serving my Guru Maharaj, when you serve a sadhu, your existence is completely irrelevant, material and spiritual. It doesn't matter. Even your sadhana is irrelevant. You have no say in what goes on. There's just no choice. I remember one time I was too busy to get sick. I remember I was getting sick, and I was the only one there to serve my Guru Maharaj. But I'm like, I don't have time for this. Too busy to be sick. Every moment, my Guru, he was, like, sometimes he would wake up, like, one time he was recovering from some health thing, so I was with him, just me and him in the middle of India, and, you know, like, it was crazy. So he would just wake up at 2 in the morning and be like, Atma, it's time for Mangalarti. And what am I going to say? No, it's not time. So it's like 2 in the morning, we're doing Mangalarti. I'm like, oh my God, you know, like, I just landed, so I had, like, massive jet lag, you know, and he's like, you know, chant lovingly. I'm like, God. he's like, then straight into Bhagavatam. He's like, okay, now we're going to recite Bhagavatam. I'm like, you know, he's like, what are you doing? Are you on drugs? I'm like, Maharaj. And then like after like 2 hours of that, he looks at the clock. He said, oh, it's only 4 o'clock. Oh, I'm sorry. Anyways, that's okay, you know. And what am I going to say, you know? There's no like, Maharaj, you know, we have a schedule. You know, we got to maintain the schedule. You know, you're a servant. You don't exist. And it's so challenging, but it's so purifying. If we lack that association, at least we have the example. We have a schedule where we can surrender ourselves to the schedule, where we put something before you, put something before you, make something else more important than yourself for at least some time. And then you'll experience what satsevaya, even for a few days, means. And it's so powerful that even if you fall back, Narada Muni says that even if you fall back, that taste you get, navayajano jatu katangjana, you'll remember that taste so much that even if you, you know, stumble along the way, that taste will be stuck in your mind, and you won't go through that stumbling period like the normal karmis do. So if we start with sadhu sangha, and we put, like we were saying, we put our sense of self, our, put them before us, and allow them to train us in that vision, to try to hear purely from them, to learn how to be attracted to the truth, and to, what's the fourth one? Learn how to have firmness in our vows. Then we create the state of being. There's a verse that Prabhupada quotes, Aharashudho Sattvashuddhi Sattvashuddho Dhruva Smriti. Then we get the Dhruva Smriti, that Dhruva means determined or unshaking smriti. And that Dhruva smriti, smriti labdhe, when you have that type of smriti, sarva grantinam, all your anarthas will be destroyed, and vipra moksha, you'll be easily able to walk on the path of supreme, not just moksha, but vipra moksha, the highest liberation, which we know is Krishna prema. So that's in summary. Put someone else before you, especially the sadhu, and you'll experience all these things, at least a little bit. I did a little bit. After that, I became a nonsense again, but at least I got a little glimmer, you know. So, thank you very much. I apologize. You're probably going to ask questions about all, how the relationships connect to the remembrance, and I'm going to be like, I don't know. But anyways, go ahead. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for your beautiful class. I also appreciate you mentioning your Guru Maharaj so much, affectionately. We don't always hear devotees doing that, so it's nice. I did have a question about the dichotomy between, maybe an apparent dichotomy between Krishna bestowing remembrance and remembrance as a sadhana also. Mm. So Prabhupada is defining the purport, conducting investigation into, which seems to indicate more on our side.
Yeah.
And also he's speaking about the five, the evolution of remembrance. And this, the last state of samadhi is clearly the gift of Krishna. But the first, at least the first three, seems to sort of indicate more of a effort-based remembrance. Dhruvanusmriti is more like an accomplishment.
That's the gift.
And then samadhi is clearly a gift. So, and also, so that's one part. What is, there seems to be two sides to that remembrance, especially remembrance as a sadhana. And then when Krishna says, for those who remember me, they will attain me, many verses in the Gita. I've always asked this question, because there's five types of remembrance. What type of remembrance is Krishna talking about there?
Sure. Excellent question. So I'll say my 2 cents, maybe 1 cent, and then other devotees can comment too. This first part of your question is really relevant in a lot of ways. It's like that dichotomy between our effort, faith and works, right? It's the eternal dilemma. Even in sadhana, you can't, by sadhana, you can't retain raga nu, you know, there's always there. And the I forgot who I was talking to. Oh, I think Bhakti Luke. The analogy that I've come to think of in turn, when I think of that dilemma, that helps me kind of piece the two together, is analogy of a small child wanting to be picked up by its mother. So the small child, if it has a first of all, the mother knows if the child wants to get picked up, really needs help or not. You know, the mother knows. If the child really needs to get picked, really wants to be lifted up by the mother or the father, it shows some. It makes an effort to show that. It doesn't just sit in a corner and be like, I hope mom comes and picks me up. You know, no, it runs over. It's crying. It's raising its hands. Please pick me up. Please pick me up. Please pick me up. But by its raising its hands and crying, it's not lifting itself off the ground. That's not what lifts it off the ground. It's the mother has to come and lift the baby off the ground. So our practice, from my sense that I've gained, our practice is really meant to be an expression of our sins. And Krishna, I do really, and he reciprocates to depending on how sincere we are. If we really want to go back to Godhead, we can go. He'll pick us up like the mother. If he sees that we're kind of like, yeah, mom, if you feel like coming, you know, it's cool. If not, it's cool. You know, I'm all right. I've got my toys still, you know. So that's how I see the two put together, that our effort is, it's purifying. Also, you have the purification element. It helps us purify our anarthas and to some extent and all that. But really, it's an indication of, like, Krishna, I really want you. And then his Madha Nugraha comes in. Okay, you really want me? Are you sure? And he tests us, you know. But when he sees that, like Prabhupada says in that purport, when someone really wants to go back to Godhead, basically he says it happens very quickly. But most people do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. So our sadhana, our practice, is meant to be a manifestation and a growth of that desire, that I really want to go back to you. And then when he sees that, then his mud, he gives us the gift. That's how I understood the two fitting together. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but is it okay? Yeah. Yeah, brother, okay. Yeah.
Me too. Thank you again. It was such a wonderful class.
There's a second point he had, though, too. So I just, if you had something in terms of that, otherwise we can. Okay. Can you say your second thing again?
The second question is, Krishna says,
those who
remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what type of members he's talking about? Because sometimes, when the bodies leave the bodies.
Yeah.
Of course, we don't want to say things like they didn't go back to God.
That might be a little bit insensitive. But many times we will hear, like, you know, any devotee leaves his body, he was remembering Krishna. Or, you know, the Prabhupada picture was in front of him, the japa was going on, so he went back. But there are different levels of remembrance. So when Krishna says, for those who remember me, what type of remembrance he's talking about there?
I agree with what I think you're saying, that when you read both the Gita and even you see examples like Bhishma Dev and things like that, their quality of remembrance, they're in the Bhagavatam because at that time of death, their quality of remembrance was, it was like samadhi on steroids, you know. They were like absorbed, you know. and that is, you know, like, it's said that there should be no other thought than Krishna. You hear stories about the mercy element coming in, and obviously no one can deny that that's possible, but that's not we shouldn't make that our goal, to like, well, Prabhupada's going to come and save me because I tried hard or whatever like that, you know? I really think to actually, because honestly speaking, you remember what you value. And Krishna reciprocates with our free will, and if we value him wholly, solely, and exclusively, we'll remember him. And you know, it's not an exercise anymore. You know, the reason we have trouble when we chant japa with our thoughts is because we actually value those thoughts more than we value the holy names. You know, it's said that attention is the currency of the mind. It's the currency of the mind, and we always give currency to things we have value. So the reason, somewhere, we may not overtly accept it, but somewhere we think these other things are more valuable, therefore we remember that. So Krishna won't bring us back to Godhead until he's the only thing that we value, him and his service, his devotees. So from my understanding of it, 100% remembrance is what brings us back. It's little remembrance is, you know, little remembrance, or whatever. You know, it'll benefit us. We'll get born in maybe a better place and all that. But I personally... Yeah, I see that too with devotees, because the sentiment's there. Oh, he must have gone back to Godhead, and you know, this and that. And it's like, I don't know. I'm not one to comment on that, but I would say it needs to be 100%. Beauty is, though, the mercy element's there, so that'll either help us be 100%, or Krishna will put us in a position where we can have the opportunity to gain 100% remembrance. That's my take on it. I don't know if... Yeah.
I was very much appreciating this flow of thought you had, that we have this being, which is like an uncontrolled elephant, and without transformation of our inner being through, you could say, the dissolution of the false ego by doing our activities with the instructions coming from Krishna, then we are sort of artificially trying to remember Krishna. I thought your story about your Guru Maharaj was also very touching. And in my own practice, I had this romantic idea that a similar thing would happen in my spiritual life, that I would sit at the lotus feet of my Guru and he would chastise me and I would humbly accept it and my false ego would dissolve. And then you come to realize you're just not that sincere. So then you think, okay, one could cultivate attraction for hearing and chanting, you know. hoping that perhaps that would dissolve my false ego, my desire to hear and chant about Krishna. And I'm wondering if perhaps that, and you know, like you said, we have an opinion and then we use the Shastra to support it. So I could probably support that opinion with Shastra, you know. But for the sake of improving my spiritual practice, I'm asking you, having recognized one's inability or one's insincerity in the dissolution of the false ego part, and thinking, well, let me try to cultivate attraction for hearing and chanting as the substitute for that, is that sort of an imposition, or is that, I guess it depends on the sincerity of your approach. Would you be willing to speak a little about this?
I think the answer is yes. It's a great question, and it's worth having long discussions on, actually, more than maybe we can do here. My Guru Maharaj also said that maturity is also a gift, along with remembrance. You know, like, you can't pull on a plant to make it grow faster. but if we understand, the problem is when we, like I've heard Jai Prabhu talk, you know, like, a lot of people, they may come and they hear the way things are done here, and they may question, you know, why are you talking about such esoteric things, or such people are just like off the street almost. But what you have, the way you express in your question has a very hopeful part to it, that if we have clarity on what Krishna consciousness really does look like, it gives us a it gives us a measure on how we can check ourselves with. So we have to have clarity on what the goal really looks like, and that develops over time. Also, we have to have that mood of satam. Bhagavatam says the people who can get into this, they have two qualities, nirmatsara and satam. Those are the ones who can actually enter into the Bhagavatam. Nirmatsara, non-envious, it's a very interesting word. I don't have time for that, maybe, to explain that word. But can I say it really quick? It's really interesting. So there's different animals used to represent symbols of envy, different types of envy in Sanskrit, so snake, scorpion. But the word matsara is described as the worst kind of envy. And matsara also means mosquito. It's the animal, matsara means mosquito. So the reason they're given as an example as the worst type of envy, because mosquitoes, their whole existence is based on sucking the blood of other people. They're exploitative, you know. So to get into Bhagavatam, we have to get near matsara, means get over this exploitative mentality. That's one. But to this point, satam, becoming thoroughly honest. We have to be thoroughly honest. And that comes over time. What I have found for myself is it's not easy, really speaking, but Krishna helps you through it, through the carrot and the stick. The stick and the stick and again the stick and then a carrot once in a while. That if we actually at least know from our study, our being, or we have that sincerity that I probably don't know what's going on. I have an idea. We keep that in mind. Then when things bump up against our perception of how things should be, we can at least step back on that reflection a little bit and start thinking, okay, maybe I had an experience with this that I relate to my association with the advanced devotees often, even though I still fight with them all the time. But that's different. Don't do that. I remember we had some rental properties in Minneapolis, like duplexes and all that. And I remember when I first was going to buy at one of the houses, I knew nothing about houses, you know. But I knew that you should examine them to make sure that they're okay before you buy it, you know. So I called an inspector. Sorry, this sounds really mundane, but it actually helps. I called an inspector to come help. And I got there before the inspector, and it was like a comical experience. I was walking around with like my critical, okay, I got to be a smart investor, you know. So I saw a crack in the wall. I'm like, that must be bad, you know. And I was saying all these things that I must be bad. You know, I'm going around, I made a list, you know. Okay, this is, you know, I don't know about this one. And then the inspector got there, and it was hilarious. I walked around the same house with him, and everything that I thought was a big deal, he said, it's not a problem at all. But everything that I missed, he said, that's a big deal. You know, that is going to collapse the whole thing, you know. So I've experienced that same thing with advanced devotees. Whatever we think is good, they'll be like, you know, and whatever we think is not Krishna conscious, they say, that's exactly what you need to do. Jayasi Chet, Arjuna says that. Why are you engaging me in this this ghastly warfare if you think, you know, our perspective is always immature in the beginning, you know. So having that, knowing that, getting seeking out that clarity of what Krishna consciousness really is and understanding that I have to be reflective in my devotional service, for me, that's what I found very helpful in whatever little progress I've made. It's not a lot, but once I become a pure devotee, I'll tell you the rest of it. How about that? No, or if you get yoga at first, so you can tell me. Thank you, though. Any other... I'm used to, in Minneapolis, we do like 2.5 hour Bhagavatam classes, so I don't know when to stop, so just tell me, you know. So if there's other questions or comments, like, please let me. Our Mangalarti start, we do it early so people can come. We start at like 6. We start Bhagavatam at 8, and sometimes at like 12:30 we're still like, all right. So anyway, it's really awesome. Any other questions, comments? Jai. Grantraj Srimad. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Comment. Oh, please, yes. Okay, if I don't really have anything else to say, but if there's...
Thank you so much for mentioning that word, kinkara, because it immediately brought to mind the fifth verse from Shikshastakam, i.e. nanda tunuja kinkaram. And also the point you made about putting someone else before us. That's really important, because sometimes, especially in my situation, I don't have too many people looking out for me.
Right, yeah.
So I have this idea of, I have to do whatever I have to do to stay Krishna conscious, you know. I have to make myself Krishna conscious somehow or another, because no one else is going to help me, which is such a bad mentality, so...
Well, it's not the worst one you could have, you know. There's worse than that, actually.
But that point you made about putting others before ourselves, you know, it's a lot softer. There's this hardness that comes in the heart when we have to be so, you know. So thank you so much for mentioning that.
Yeah, we have to remember we're not yogis, you know. We treat devotional service like yoga all the time, like trying to, you know, like, do, you know what I mean. But we are beggars at the lotus feet of these processes. Our process is begging. Please, Krishna, let me hear about you. Please, you know, it's just please, 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 please. Please, my Guru Maharaj used to say, please, please, please. He said it because we were rascals, but we can use the same word. And please, Krishna, I just need your help. Yeah, very nice. Thank you.
And I do have a question.
Okay.
So this process of remembering, Jai Jagannath Prabhu mentioned that it can also be a sadhana. You spoke about the more esoteric aspect, and he mentioned, you know, remembering is a sadhana. So what is the importance of structuring our days in such a way that we're constantly creating Krishna conscious impressions and memories, for example, going on Harinam and having experiences from those, because we might not be able to remember Krishna's Leela and etc., but what role does Krishna conscious memories, according to our level, have in remembering Krishna?
So how important is it? Very important. What Prabhupada is saying here when he says that it's after the whole heart is cleansed, smaranam is recommended, that's like, you know, that's like Radha Krishna Leela Smaran kind of stuff, you know, where I'm going to like sit back and, not sit back, but, you know, like absorb myself in Radha Krishna Leela, and, you know, it's like a whole different level. For us, we do have to try to remember, but our remembrance comes from in our sense, it arises. The more we do the structure, Prabhupada gave us the structure because it's meant to arise. The problem what we do is we allow it to become mechanical, and then we have the experience like, you know, as soon as Bhagavatam's class over, then we remember everything except Bhagavatam class, you know. A lot of that is because of the momentum of our conditioning, you know. We have this conditioning to remember everything else. It's just like a bhava pravaho. So what Mother Kunti gives us kind of a nice... sequence to help overcome that over time. And there's a word that she uses that it's a very simple word, and we hear it all the time, but I've been trying to appreciate it more. And it's Shrivanti Gayanti Grinanti Abhikshnasaha. Shrivanti we hear, Gayanti we sing, but Grinanti, my Guru Maharaj used to say, is very, very important. That's accepting. Because a lot of times we do a lot of singing and hearing, but the real heartfelt acceptance, like really accepting. And the Bhagavatam, again, in the 12th canto, maturing that acceptance is given as another three-step sequence. Shrinvan, Supatan, and Vicharana Paro. Srinvan Supatan Vicharnapado Bhakti Vimucheta, then Bhakti develops. Srinvan, again, hearing. And in order to increase our acceptance of what we're hearing, Supatan. Patan means to study, and Supatan means like super study, you know, intense study. Or like Bhadra is auspicious, Subhadra is like really auspicious, you know. So Supatan, we have to study. And then Srinvan Supatan Vicharanapro, we have to meditate on what we're hearing. Through that meditation, the acceptance, the ability to really see what's going on and accept comes in. And do you mind if I give another verse? Is that okay? Again, my Guru Maharaj pointed out this really beautiful verse to make it all happen. This is like why Shukadeva Goswami was who he was is this verse. And it's given for us too. It's right in the beginning. 1, 2, 3. It's easy to remember. 1, 2, 3. So this verse talks about how the mechanics of what we're doing how we can take what we're hearing and process it in a certain way so that actual transcendental knowledge awakens in our heart. Yaswanu bhavam akila shruti saram ekam adhyatma deepam atitir tirshatam tamundam. The first part is what's important. My Guru Maharaj pointed out that what Shukadeva Goswami did was he took two things and put them together. Almost like food and the stomach, you know. Swa anubhava means our own swa anubhavam, swa our anubhava, our own life experiences. We have to take our experience in life and combine them with shruti saram ekam, with the essence of the scriptures, with the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's how we meditate on this. The problem is we go through life and have all these experiences and we don't connect it with the shastras. We connect it with our old knowledge, you know. But when we start seeing our lives through the wisdom of the shot, we combine our life experience with... So when we're struggling, read the Bhagavatam and see why. When we're happy, read the Bhagavatam and see why. When you don't know what you are, read the Bhagavatam and see why. You know? He says, Yaswanu bhavam akila shruti saram ekam adhyatma. By that, my Guru Maharaj said, by the friction between those two things, adhyatma deepam, the light of transcendental knowledge is awakened in your heart. So our process of remembrance is not Radha Krishna Lila Smaran in the beginning. Our process of using our mind, like he says, researching, you know, that's the beginning. We're doing all this process, research, what is going on? Am I actually, you know, Pareshanu Bhavo? Am I actually experiencing Krishna more? Am I not experiencing Krishna more? I wonder why I'm not, or I wonder, wow, I did. We'll get into this phase. It's a little bit, that's sadhana bhakti. And we'll become like Narada Muni, where sometimes, you know, when he first did his thing, he had, oh, boom. He followed the directions and he had that experience of Krishna, right? You know, he's like, oh, this is awesome. And then it went away. And he's like, what happened? And then he tried the same thing again and it didn't work. And then Krishna came and told him why it didn't work, right? So we'll go through that phase. And Krishna told him three things why you won't be able to have that experience anymore. Avipakwa kashayanam and dudarshuham kuyogiyam. I will be very hard to see for you, Narada Muni, right now because you're avipakwa kashayanam and kuyoginam. Avipakwa means immature. I'm just being fast. Avipakwa, you're immature, therefore your darshan of me is difficult. Kashayanam means you still have taints of material dirt in you. There's like around the rim of the pot. And kuyoginam, Prabhupada translates as incomplete in service. We go, but we don't go all the way. There's always some reservation there. So until we overcome those three things, our remembrance is going to be kind of in the realm of understanding our sadhana, understanding the goal. It's a little bit intellectual, but that's okay. We need that. We need to engage the mind and senses. The only recommendation is don't just go through the motions. Let that meditation come along with it. And then you'll start to see where... I'll end with this. Make a long story longer, I'll end with this. What I've found is to the extent we study the shastras and hear with the devotees, what it allows us to do is refine our efforts so that with the same amount of effort, we get more progress back. What happens many times is without that refinement, we do a lot of stuff, but the amount of spiritual progress return we get is very difficult. Like, again, mundane example. When I started skateboarding, you know, to get the skateboard off the ground, it's called an ollie. To do an ollie, it took every fiber of my being. I had to, like, you know, like, it was like you know, like, I got to get this, you know. But over time with experience, I was able to refine myself. So with almost no effort, I could get it off the ground. I don't know, landing was a different story. But, you know, I could get it off the ground, right? So same way, when you study, the same effort is given refinement so that the progress can become more efficient. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I like talking, so.
Thank you. The importance of connecting our experiences with Scripture. Yeah. So thank you so much.
All experience, not just in here, out there too, both. Jai, any other comments, questions, complaints?
Does anyone?
Anyone else? Yeah.
Would you say that's why, unfortunately, so many devotees, though they've done so much service, you know, they're like famous in our movement for accomplishing amazing things, and they sometimes, is it a lack of connecting their experience? It's not a matter of how much service we do, but the quality of it and why we're doing what we're doing.
Devotees only fall down because they're envious and rascals, really. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's... Totally kidding. Is that totally kidding on the internet? Totally kidding. It's very, very easy to... It's a very mystical thing because it can be disheartening for us as young devotees. Like, holy crap, they've been chanting for... Or sometimes when you hear devotees say, like, you know, I've been chanting for 35 years and my japa still sucks. You know, it's like, oh God, great. You know, wonderful, you know? So you start to wonder, like, what is going on here, you know? You know what? But sincerity is not mechanical, you know? And a lot of times what I've noticed is what can happen over time is... Again, that reflection. A lot of times, there's a few things that usually wane or start to fade out, and then trouble begins. It almost becomes like kind of like that third chapter Gita verse, Karmendriyani Sam Yamya, Ya Aste Manasas Maran. They keep the karmendriyas going, the active senses are doing all the motions, but the mind starts to drift, right? And that dichotomy can only go on for so long. If you're doing the karmendriya, you're doing the actions, but your mind is drifting, after a while, that elephant's going to crush your actions, you know? So what I've noticed, this is just, again, I'm like, you know, not much, but what I've noticed is, as devotees, we can, just like every other tradition, we can get very ritualistic. It's very mechanical. Also, we lose the root. Many times we lose the root of why we came to Krishna consciousness. Most of us at some point had a little bit at least of atato brahma jigyasya. We had that inquisitiveness. We came here, we didn't come here to find, we all probably had a religion beforehand. That's why we came. But along the way, we forget that that root, that quest, that curiosity. When you're growing a plant, the bigger the plant is, the deeper, the root has to get bigger. It can't get smaller. But what I've noticed, sorry to say, is sometimes as devotees, we lose that root, that we are here to find, we have to be intensely curious to find the absolute truth all the time. The reason you go away from Krishna consciousness is you've lost your curiosity, somehow or other. There's different reasons why. Or you get frustrated, something like that. That's for people who actually go away. People who maybe leave the institution but are still practicing, they still, you know, that's a different, whole different category. But for people who actually leave Krishna consciousness, it's basically, what I've seen is two reasons. One is they lose their quest for the truth. They uprooted the wrong thing. They're uprooting stuff, like all the anartas, and I, whoop, pull out my inquiry for the wrong root. Sorry. You know? And the other thing is a very, very heinous tendency that we have, very heinous, is that we get caught up in our expectations. We all come, we have expectations of how long things should take, how things should be, the way things should go, what spiritual life means, what spiritual life looks like. All these expectations, yata na basi megao go, it says that just as the cloud carries dust, or the air carries dust, people think that the air is dirty. But in the same way, we bring our material, we implant our material bodily conceptions on the spirit self or on the spiritual process. So we come with these expectations. And because of that, we become disturbed when things don't go our way. However, if we can let go of our expectations, Krishna says, nirapeksha munim shantam, nirvairam samadarshanam, that when you become nirapeksha means we have no expectations. Krishna, you can advance me as quick or as slow as you want. I'm just going to do seva. That's it. Or hear chant. I'm just going to follow it. Like Jayananda Prabhu said, sorry, 6 minutes. When someone asked Jayananda Prabhu, how did you advance so quickly? And he said, well, I didn't even have time to think about it. I don't know. I was, you know. Nirapeksham, when you give up your expectations, munim shantam, you can become peaceful in your service. You become shantam. Otherwise, there's always this dichotomy. It should be like this, Prabhu. No, it's... you know. Nirapeksham, munim shantam, nirvairam. Then you have no enemies. Otherwise, you create enemies. It's one thing to have like-minded association. It's another thing to create enemies. Enemies come because expectations aren't being met. Krishna says, if you overcome all these, give up your expectations, become silent, you only speak of Krishna, become peaceful, have no enemies, then anuvrajamaham nityam, I will follow in your footsteps, Krishna says. I follow in the footsteps of those devotees to take the dust of their feet and purify myself. So if Krishna is following in our footsteps, we're probably in a pretty good place, you know? And you probably won't fall down. But the root of it is we have to keep our quest for the absolute truth strong, and we have to gradually or quickly, whatever, just let go of expectations as much as possible. Otherwise, frustration builds, and the best way to get rid of frustration, we think, is to go that way, not this way, somehow. Like that. Is that okay? Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
Of course, not commenting on senior devotees of those things, but just in principle, that verse I'm often fond of quoting recently because I'm studying it.
Sure.
Etava deva jignasyam tata jignasu na atmana. So the serious student of the absolute truth who is searching after the absolute, the personality of Godhead, most certainly search for it up to this point. So anyone who is observing that there is some lack in terms of their movement toward the state of accomplishment, then tata jignasuna, they will inquire from sadhu, what is the defect in me? Like Vyasudev asking Narayana, what is the defect in me that I'm not? And some of my personal observation, let's say within other traditions like Christianity and so on, and I think it's happening in our tradition slowly but surely, is that we are putting so much dependence on books to give us answers.
That's a good point.
For the murtis to give us blessings and answers. And we don't put so much faith in the sadhus that exist around us. Mm-hmm. And because of recent history, you know, there's a lot of doubt concerning the existence of sadhus oftentimes and so on. And so we tend to kind of become converted into impersonalist in our approach towards the personal absolute by just saying the answers are in the books, the answers are in the murtis, and so on, without seeking the sangha. And so I feel that a lot of times when devotees do struggle with their Christian consciousness internally, the natural approach is you approach a sadhu more advanced than yourself. That means someone you can see, you can inquire, you can render service, you have enough faith, you give them the liberty to chastise you or whatever. But then my observation is that part is missing more and more, and our relationships with sadhus in front of us is becoming very much, let's say, formal.
Yeah.
And as such, you know, there's no one to protect us from the, you know, we've uprooted our curiosity or whatever, as you were describing. And then gradually one fades away. So I always like to underscore that.
You can capitalize it. You can caps lock it if you want. That's very important.
All caps underscore, triple underscore. that sadhu sangha is as much the abhidhaya as these nine processes of devotional service are the abhidhaya. Because it's from sadhus we are to hear, in the company of sadhus in which we are to do kirtan and so on. So like this, that's also, I'm sure there are many elements to it, but this is in terms of a personal observation.
And I won't stay long, I'm done. And I think the reason that devotees haven't, sometimes at least, the reason is they don't take that association is because they're embarrassed. We've had, in our movement, we've had a very, sometimes artificially harsh treatment of vulnerabilities or weaknesses. And because of that, it can make us shy to approach a sadhu when we're vulnerable, you know? So anyways, that's a long topic. We'll end here, but yeah. Oh, yes, Prabhu. Yeah. I'm okay going longer. I get paid by the hour, so you get, you know.
Last question, maybe.
Yeah.
One thing I'm just appreciating from discussion is how Jai mentioned this also once before, that we, as far as expectations go, you know, our conception of Krishna consciousness is like Prabhupada, like doing something just fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, we see more and more that it's really small steps. In the service to a spiritual master, he may be asking you to do something very small. It may seem very insignificant, but it's that type of surrender, putting his, you know, desire above our own. So how do we get out of this kind of concept that Krishna consciousness means like delivering like the state of California or, like these type of grandiose, we hear about the early disciples, you know, we're going to like deliver a continent. And it's really more like try to like help this householder or like try to, you know, assist this congregation or like just do something really menial.
Excellent question. I hesitate to say we should lose our desire to liberate the state of California, but because it seems like it's a balance that if we don't lose our, you know, Prabhupada said, hunt for the rhino, you know. So we got to keep that mood of bigness. That, I mean, we're not meant to be a like we are now, a like someone I heard a voice say that we're no longer margin, we're not even on the margin anymore, you know, in terms of society, the impact we're having on society. It's like we're less than marginal now, you know. So we shouldn't want to stay there. Definitely we have to keep that mood in mind. In terms of appreciating the small things, like service to the sadhu and things like that. From my experience, the way I have come to appreciate it as much as I, as to the little extent that I have, is the only thing I can say is by experience. Like when you have the experience, sometimes you'll have that experience where you'll have a huge program. And it'll be like 100, I don't know, you probably have big programs here, I don't know. And it's nice, but then there's other times when you like offer, like when you're really in a good mood and you offer a flower to Prabhupada's lotus feet, there's like a difference almost, you know. So one, just the thought that comes to mind is to appreciate the power of those small experiences small services is to really make an effort. Like I don't succeed mostly, but every day I try to do something small and really put my heart into it, and then you start to really, if you feel like that is as powerful as 100 people chanting Hare Krishna in some ways, you know. So that experience has given me an appreciation of like the small things, like washing the pots and you know, doing all that stuff. I also have I'm a dreamer, you know, like John Lennon's disciple, I guess, or something. But so I'm always like, we gotta like, you know, like you said, liberate cows. Good. So, but when I'm doing the services, I meditate on either how it's connected to the bigger thing, and hopefully that's going on, the bigger thing, and also that I just put myself in the mood of that I'm nothing, or try to anyways, and you start to see like, wow, if I can't even serve my gurus. I had that. Sorry, I'm rambling. I had that experience with my Guru Maharaj a lot. I'm like, Maharaj, let's go do these programs, you know. And I'm like sitting there, like
cleaning his bathroom, you know, like every day, and it's like, you know, like you have the theory that, okay, I'm cleaning my grandma's bathroom, and, you know, I should take the water and like splash it on my face or whatever, you know, and like, you know, all that, which I did, you know, or I have to take the dust of the lotus feet so I'd like, you know, sweep the floor and like smear it on my body, you know, and I'm like, I'm still a rascal, what the heck is broken or something, something's not right. But, you know, but in that, it's almost like all of a sudden there's this nugget, you know? Like, I've had some huge doubts in my Krishna consciousness, like major. The whole sun and moon thing for me, that was almost catastrophic. Like, I almost broke, you know? That was just, like, terrible for me. The whole sun and moon, you know, hearing the sun, it was just like, I almost fell over, like, 60 times. I'm like, I'd go in and be like, I love Krishna, but the damn sun and moon, man, like, what the heck? You know, I don't get, you know? And I was doing so much preaching at the time, a lot of that yada, yada, yada. There was big stuff going on. But it wasn't until I was in Rajkot, and there was no one in the temple. My Guru Maharaj was stressing the importance of simple service. He was quoting, I think, a verse by Raghunath Das Goswami that our aspiration should be to have increasingly menial services. It was really interesting. I can try to find that somewhere. But it was like Raghunath Das, of all people, saying our aspiration for service should be increasingly menial. So I'm like, all right. So I just took a broom and I was sweeping and I was praying. I was having a lot of stuff going on. And I asked it was the sun and moon thing. And I asked my Guru Maharaj, you know, this whole blah, 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 blah. And he said, because he's from like a 7-8 generation Vaishnava family. He was like, you know, pure devotee from birth kind of thing, you know, one of those guys, you know. So he's like, my grandparents never worried about the sun and moon. I'm like, well, that's not really the answer I was looking for, Maharaj, but all right, I'll go with it, I guess, you know. So I was just like in the temple and I was sweeping, you know, and I was just like, Krishna, please, you got to help me. And I still don't understand the sun and moon, but all of a sudden something in my heart just broke, you know. It was like an iceberg just kind of, and everything was like okay somehow, you know. So I had that experience through the menial services because I really put my heart into it. And then you can start to see why they're so valuable. That's the only thing I can offer right off the top of my head to your question. If anybody else has other comments, that's great. I don't know if that fully did it, but it's almost just like if you put your heart there, then you'll see the value of it. And you'll see how it's connected to that bigger service, if I had to summarize it.
An internal vision. When we think of
what you first said because the mic was off, so.
When we think of it as I don't remember what I said, but okay. When we think of it externally, you know, Bahir Mukh, yeah. What devotional service is, the mental conceptions and the bodily concept of life, but just being in line with our spiritual master, serving in that selfless way, then from within, the real satisfaction of Krishna consciousness comes.
Yeah, yeah,
so just
exactly.
Reversing our conception and finding the contentment in that menial service.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, then you can comment. That experience does more than all the intellectualism about it. Like when you're there and you're actually there and you experience it, that from within experience is like, wow, you know, this is awesome.
One of the meanings of Maya is to measure.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah.
So when one is under the influence of Maya, the tendency is toward empiricism and measurement. And so, and we're in Maya when we're joining the Krishna consciousness movement. And so Krishna consciousness development will be influenced by, our understanding of development will be influenced by Maya. So we're looking for measurement. How many plates of prasadam went out? Mm. How, you know, or, and so on. And then as we, and therefore a big topic of Samband again is understanding Maya Shakti. That's why it takes up a huge, you know, even in the 4C verses which I'm studying now, that's one of the main topics. How Maya, that's one of the verses, you know, how Maya,
yeah.
Because unless the influence of Maya is removed, you can't get the gift of prema. So then, you know, through the process, that influence of Maya has to uplift or be removed. And then we can our understanding of Krishna consciousness will accordingly be transformed. Otherwise, the tendency is always towards measurement when you're in Maya, even if you want to get out of it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if you like feel like, we may even say, it's about how many people who are sincere came.
Yeah.
But if like 50 people come, you feel nice because 50 people came.
Yeah.
Never
and
mind
we assume they're sincere because
they're
there. Yeah.
So yeah. There's just the workings of Maya is on the conditioned souls, on all of us.
Yeah.
So then when that is removed, then so also transformation of our understanding.
Yeah. I do appreciate, though, it is a challenge, you know, because I'm kind of, I have the same
Like, I don't like seeing, I'm not, what I'm about to say does not mean I'm para dukkha dukkhi, so please don't think I'm saying that. But, yeah, it's not controversial, but I also, like, I have a strong thing, like, you know, I hate seeing suffering. It just, you know, I don't want it. You know, big reason I came here because I understood that Krishna consciousness can relieve suffering. So when I'm sitting in my room, like, offering flowers to Krishna, sometimes it's frustrating. Or, like, you know, when things are going on and it doesn't seem like we're preaching strongly enough, it can be frustrating, you know. But if I allow myself to realize that, okay, Krishna's in control, number one, and number two, I'm going to try to jump at every opportunity to preach just to make sure that I'm not getting lazy. That's given me some console or some solace in those times when it feels like we're not doing the big seva that we could, you know. So that Krishna's trying to teach me something through this experience. Like, I remember hearing about this devotee who, or person, I don't think he was a devotee actually, but he went to learn kirtan in India, and he was like a musician, you know. And so there's like these advanced kirtaniyas there. And he got there and he was a musician, you know, so he knew, you know, he thought he could pick it up right away. And they had him for like the first like 3 months just tune the veena. That's all he could do, was just learn how to tune the veena. And after like 3 weeks, he's like, all right, guys, you know, like, you know, I can tune the veena now. No, just keep tuning the veena, you know. And he was getting frustrated because he has so many more skills than just tuning the veena. I'm a musician, I have all this stuff to give. But there is a root. You know, in one sense, if we want to transpose that on our Krishna consciousness, sometimes there's a root anarta that Krishna has to cut before we're ready to go out. It's kind of like, you know, Narottama Das Thakur. He didn't have root anartas to cut before he went preaching, but still, sometimes they hold things back. Like, they didn't go out to preach until Lokanath Goswami would initiate him. You know, because they were saying they were showing the principle of the importance of diksha. Narottama Das Thakur was, you know, the man even before he was initiated by Lokanath Goswami. But the other Goswamis wouldn't let them leave until Lokanath Goswami initiated him, because they wanted someone who actually was in the, you know, who could clearly show that I'm in this parampara to go preach. You know, so sometimes it seems like the advanced devotees are like telling us to do things that seem not as important, or they're holding us back. And again, it's like that house. What we think is important, they may think. So if we can allow ourselves to look within that circumstance, and what anarta or what principle am I actually missing that I need to learn? If we can get that, then we'll be actually ready to go out and liberate, or like help, you know, help Lord Chaitanya liberate the souls. But sometimes we forget that. My Guru Maharaj used to say, the fastest way to become free from your duties is to do them properly. It's kind of a similar principle. Like, even Grihastha Ashram, he said the fastest way to get out of Grihastha Ashram, besides our technique, which is divorce and, you know, stuff like that, That must be in the 19th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, because I don't know. But aside from that, the fastest way to actually emerge from Grihastha Ashram is to do it properly. Not to be anxious to get out all the time. Like, I have to leave. Am I just time to leave yet? Is it, you know, because we don't actually get the purification from that circumstance then. We just get anxious to be who we think we are, kind of thing. So I don't do it well all the time, but when I'm in a circumstance that feels constricting or feels different than I think it should be, I try to meditate on what is my proper behavior, in what purification do I need to get from this experiment so that I'm ready to go to California and liberate the whole thing. So, you know, that's just some thoughts. Okay. I'm okay with the question, but I don't know what to say. Should we stop here? You guys, it's your temple. I don't know what's going on. Okay. Sure. Okay. I don't know, maybe we could wrap it up. You think we should wrap it? I don't know. What do you think? Do you have like a super big question or? Yeah, well, how about we do that? Is that okay? I mean, huh? Downstairs, okay, yeah. You're cutting into my nap time here. I mean, come on. Just kidding. All right, Jai. Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai. Glorious assembled devotees. Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.